Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Gregory Melville and Susan Fox and Kathleen Bromage.
This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. Expanding the sales tax and bringing back tolls, not to mention supporting school regionalization. None of these are proposals that will help Governor Ned Lamont win a popularity contest. But Lamont also says he's open to other ideas to get to a balanced budget. So here's your chance to chime in with ways you think the governor and the Connecticut General Assembly could do just that. Governor Lamont joins us Where We Live for the hour. You can too. Here's the number, 860-275-7266. You can always tweet us at Where We Live. We're also on Facebook Live today. Thank you for watching, and you can add your comment or question right below that live video stream. We had planned to also talk with the new Transportation Commissioner, Joseph Giletti, and then winter happened, and he's not here with us, but we're happy to see Governor Lamont back in our studios. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Lucy. Great to be back.
So did you snowshoe in?
I had a short drive on a well-plowed road. Joe Giletti, our new head of transportation, and the guys at the emergency operations team were going round the clock. I think they did a pretty good job.
And so this is, the first weather event where you have had to shift when state workers are coming into the Capitol. Tell us what the plan is, as state workers may be hearing you right now on our radio.
So we got on last night at 9 o'clock with all the folks in the emergency operations center and a few folks from our staff. And we got their recommendations, where the snow is going to fall, where it might be most heavy, and what would be the safety prerogatives on the streets. And that's when we decided that, state workers could show up 2 hours later, which would ease the commute for other people and make it easier for us to plow the roads.
And so you're happy with the response that you're seeing this morning?
Well, maybe I'll hear from your listeners.
We can be sure of that. So I wanted to ask you, because Commissioner Giletti wasn't able to join us as planned, tell us a little bit about why you picked him to lead the Department of Transportation.
Joe Giletti was previously president of Metro North. And if I'm going to get the transportation system moving in this state and speed up rail, I need somebody who understands rail and somebody who can work with New York, because Metro North is sort of controlled by New York right now. So having the former president, Joe Giletti, now as head of DOT, gives us a big running head start. If I can just fix two or three of the bridges that Metro North goes over, we can speed up transportation by 15, 20 minutes between, say, Hartford, New Haven, Stamford, and most importantly, down to New York.
You mentioned this 30-30 plan during your State of the State or budget address. I can't remember which one. Is that realistic to get from point A to point B in that time?
Well, it's absolutely realistic. I just don't want to overpromise. I mean, it'll probably take 10 years to do that. But what we can do is have more frequent rail service, fix the roads, fix the signalization. And in less than 5 years, we can make a real difference.
You mentioned that Commissioner Giletti is a rail guy. That's important considering this Hartford line that's been operating, I believe, for about a year. Still a lot of problems because of ridership, not enough trains, and because Amtrak, I guess, owns the tracks. There's been some concerns about when certain people that want to ride Hartford line have to get off so that the Amtrak ticket holder can take a seat. I mean, how are you going to resolve that, Governor?
I think I'll resolve that with Joe Giletti. But I think fundamentally getting Hartford connected on more frequent service all the way to Springfield, eventually Springfield, Boston, we really create a rail network to allow people to get around. I got to tell you, when I talk to a business folks around the state, when I talk to folks who are thinking about moving a business to Connecticut, you know, one of the top two or three questions I always get is gridlock on the roads and highways. And number one issue for them is, how can I get my employees there? How can I make sure that my customers have easy access? And that's going to be a matter of getting some of those cars and trucks off the road, at least during peak hour. And some of that involves a more frequent, regular, reliable rail service.
When can residents expect to see that more frequent, reliable rail service?
I certainly think we can make real progress in the next few years. you know, like I said, some of it is just basic maintenance, bringing things up to maintenance repair. Some of it requires investments in signalization and such. Some of it will require, you know, the federal government moving forward with a real infrastructure bill. So for the most expensive types of upgrades, we're going to have to wait there. But there's a real opportunity talking to, you know, John Larson. I had the opportunity to meet the Vice President Pence just a week or so ago. And an infrastructure bill is going to be a big priority. And that would mean whatever we can raise here in Connecticut, we could leverage 4 or 5 to 1 with the federal government and get our trains and highways moving again.
What is the state's relationship with Amtrak? Again, because of this having to coexist with the Hartford Line and the Amtrak trains, but also when you think about much-needed improvements on Shoreline East, I understand that service has really been broken up because of repairs that need to be done and bus service. People just aren't riding that train anymore. What is the state going to do to alleviate that?
My understanding is Shoreline East has gotten less frequent, less reliable, and Lucy, as you point out, a lot of that is due to some of the repairs that are long overdue that are going on. I know how important it is for New London and all along the shore to make sure we have more frequent rail service there. I've got to tie this state together. And New London to New Haven to Stamford or Hartford, rail is going to be a big piece of our future.
We haven't talked about tolls yet, but that's something that is really drawing ire from many residents. They thought that you were going to only put forth a proposal to toll just trucks. You changed your mind. Why did you change your mind?
Well, to be exact, I put forward both proposals to the legislature last week. One is trucks only, and one is for trucks and cars. We thought a year ago, 6 months ago, that we'd have resolution from Rhode Island, where there's a lawsuit regarding the trucks-only tolling. And we may not get resolution on that for the foreseeable future. And it may be a very narrow interpretation. So if you really want to get this state moving again, if you want 30-30-30, if you want to speed up trucks, speed up rail and car transportation, we've got both tolling options on the platform. The legislature will consider it, and I'll tell them why. At the end of the day, I think getting our transportation system moving is the most important thing we can do if you believe in jobs, economic opportunity, and getting this state growing again.
David on Twitter writes, you said during your campaign, we cannot tax our way out of this mess, yet your solutions are all grounded in more taxation. He wants you to work with Republicans to find a bipartisan way to fund transportation without more taxes or tolls. What do you say to David?
I tell David that we have the leanest budget this state has seen in many a year. We've got real structural reforms when it comes to health care in particular, how we can bring down the cost of our employee plans there, and working collaboratively with labor. They've been a big help coming to the table here. I promised that we were not going to raise the income tax and not raise the sales tax rates, but I also did say we were going to expand the base on the sales tax as an alternative. But this is really driven on a budget that is focused on doing everything I can to get this economy growing again. And David, I would just tell you that if Connecticut had the same growth as our neighboring states, just the average around the country over the last 10 years, we'd be talking about the surplus. We'd be talking about how we cut taxes or invest more aggressively for the future.
Governor Ned Lamont is here with us here on Where We Live. You can join our conversation, 860-275-7266. You can also find us on Facebook Live. Also tweet us at Where We Live. Governor, you said that you promised you wouldn't raise the income tax. Why are you not in favor of doing that? Because there is the Progressive Caucus within the House. There are many working poor and middle-class residents in the state of Connecticut who think that the rich should be paying more. Why don't you not want to raise the income tax?
I said we shouldn't raise the income tax because, A, we have raised it 4 or 5 times in the last 12 years. I say 4 or 5. The last one was when the Trump tax bill came through and ended the deductibility of state and local taxes, which represents a big tax increase. I see there's been a law of diminishing returns where the more we raise the income tax, the less relative revenue we got coming in. I look at New York, which has higher income tax than we do, and they got $2 or $3 billion less dollars from the income tax than they had anticipated. So I thought it was important to stay consistent with holding the line on what is the workhorse of our revenue, which is the income tax. We raise almost most of our revenue that way, but I think we should hold the line. And we will.
Expanding sales tax, isn't that pretty regressive? Isn't that hit the working poor and middle class pretty hard, especially when you're also asking for tolls on the roads, Governor?
We've got a lot of ways we can address that. We can do that by doing a small rebate on the property tax, doing something on the earned income tax credit. There are ways that we can address what could be, regressive when it comes to the sales tax. I'd also tell you that I just think it's unfair that the digital economy is untaxed while our Main Street merchants have to collect the sales tax. And frankly, it's more upper income people that are taking advantage of the digital economy, be it e-commerce or downloads or what have you. So I think there's a certain fairness to it as well.
We're going to take some calls now. Again, the number 860-275-7266 to join Where We Live with Governor Ned Lamont. Neil's calling from New Hartford. Neil, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Neil.
Go ahead with your question.
Yes, Governor. One of the things that you've been reputed to be is approachable. And I'd like to find out if I can bring to you an alternative plan that would not involve using taxes on our highways. I'm going to meet with one of my state senator, my state senator, tomorrow. I've already met with my state rep to discuss that. And we'd like to bring it to you and see what you think of these ideas. It's progressive. It's not regressive. And as a Democrat, and I'm a longtime Democrat, I think traditional Democratic values are not to hurt low and middle income people with regressive taxation. So would you be available?
Yeah, I'd love to hear more about your plan. And I will tell you that we've had Republicans and Democrats coming into my office. It is an open door policy. I put forward what I considered an honest and fair budget that keeps faith with what we said over the last 12 months, that gives the state the best chance to grow and get jobs. But, Neil, I'd love to hear, your thoughts and other thoughts. Maybe give it to your state senator, and we can share notes with him or her.
So what are the options if tolls are not passed through the Connecticut General Assembly, Governor Lamont? How can you fix the roads?
If tolls are not passed, right now we have the Special Transportation Fund that's running out of dough. It's running out of dough for some good reasons. I mean, electric cars and fuel-efficient vehicles. So I can potentially raise the gas tax, something I really don't want to do. I can't tell you that Joe Giletti is working like a demon when it comes to holding down the costs of construction on our roads and bringing down the cost per mile and getting the administrative overhead out and finding ways we can do the engineering at less cost. But neither of those will be enough to certainly won't be enough to speed up our roads and rail. And one other thing on the tolls, which is worth remembering, is if we get, $1 billion in tolling revenue over the next, on an annual basis, $400 million a year of that will come from out-of-staters. And we've been subsidizing their road repair for a long time in Massachusetts and New York. So I'm going to give them an opportunity to help out here in Connecticut.
You mentioned the Special Transportation Fund under former Governor Malloy. We heard that if nothing is done, that Special Transportation Fund would be insolvent, I believe, by 2021, 2022. The state legislature did approve moving some sales tax revenue receipts to that fund. I understand through reporting by the Mirror and others that you suggest taking that money that was supposed to go in the transportation fund to help plug this $3.7 billion budget. Why do that?
Well,
if we need these projects.
That's half right. On the sales tax on cars, we're freezing the amount of money that goes from the operating fund into the special transportation fund. But if the legislature signs on and we expand the base of the sales tax like we've projected, that would be more revenue from that sales tax going into the special transportation fund. But your fundamental question is, we keep borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. I mean, borrowing from the bankrupt operating fund to put money into the insolvent transportation fund. I'm going to make a transportation fund that is solvent for the long term, that has its own independent source of revenues coming in, that allows us to grow this economy and allows me to take advantage of the federal government when their infrastructure bill's in place. I'd like to say you're going to see a transportation system you will not recognize in the next 10 years in this state.
You've alluded to your debt diet, not wanting to borrow to pay for projects. How does that impact near-term transportation projects? Obviously, Transportation Commissioner Gilletti is not here to answer this question, but I'm just curious, with even with if tolls were to be passed, that's several years down the line where we'd see the hundreds of millions of dollars towards transportation. You don't want to be borrowing to pay for projects. So what transportation projects are going to be sidelined in the meantime, Governor?
Well, our debt diet is on the GO bonds. That's on the operating side of the budget. And we borrowed ourselves crazy over the last 8-10 years. And bonding went up by something like 60%. And that means our fixed costs are going through the roof, and that impacts our operating budget. So I don't really like the suggestions that let's move our transportation obligations over to the operating budget as well, which would freeze out schools and other important work we're doing. And yeah, everybody cheered the fact that we have to go on a debt diet. We will go on a debt diet, but you can't say in the same breath, and let's borrow more on transportation out of those same bonds. It doesn't make sense.
You can join our conversation, 860-275-7266. Lydia is calling from Ansonia. Lydia, go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Lydia.
Good morning. I'm a teacher in a school district where we hardly have any money. Right. And I also voted for you. I also supported you. I went door to door handing out flyers. So I'm a real big supporter of you, and I hope that you take care of our needs. There's two comments and a question. I don't want tolls in Connecticut. And my question is, a long time ago when they started the lottery, the proceeds were supposed to go to education. I want to know what happened with that situation, and how can the rich be taxed, the upper percent of, small upper percent of people who are making millions of dollars?
All right, three great questions, Lydia. Thank you, and I really appreciate your support. We're not going to let you down. And I am committed to education. We're holding education harmless overall in our budget, which is pretty good in a tight fiscal times like this. And in another time, I'll tell you what we've done to keep the teachers' pension fund solvent. That is so important for you and the next generation of teachers. We can talk about that later if you want. One thing we are doing is using some of the rainy day fund to allow us to refinance the teachers' pension fund so it's there for the long term. And we haven't ruled out the possibility of using the lottery, at least the lottery revenues, to help bolster the pension funds as well. That's something that we've considered. On the rich paying more, I would say just what Lucy asked me before, but I'd add to this that, we've increased the tax five times over the last 12 years. But also, I am asking the wealthier communities to do a little bit more. And that gets back to the teachers' pension fund. If you're in a wealthier community that pays your teachers a lot more, which means you have higher pension costs, I think we've asked those towns to contribute a little bit more. So everybody is going to be contributing, and including those wealthier communities. And tolls, you know, we've talked about that before. I could just tell you again that the most important thing for Ansonia and the Valley and small manufacturing and all the opportunities I see there in your neck of the woods involve transportation and getting our state moving again. And the number one thing I hear from businesses far and wide is it's getting tougher and tougher for our employees to get to work, and it's costing us time, and it's costing them money. So I'm going to be sitting down with Republicans and Democrats to find the best alternative to make sure we get this state moving again. The most important thing I could do for job opportunity for all our folks.
A lot of residents, again, see if tolls come back on these several highways in the state as another tax. Can you walk us through this idea of how much of a discount can local residents get where it's not violating what the federal government believes would be discriminating against out-of-state residents as well?
Yeah, we're looking at, again, look at Massachusetts. We would have Easy Pass, just like they have Easy Pass. If you buy a Connecticut Easy Pass, I think we can offer a significant discount. discount, say 30 to 40%. In addition, I believe the feds will allow us to offer a discount to those who have to use the roads more frequently. So you could get a discount of 40 to 50% compared to what out-of-staters are paying. And that would make an enormous difference. And then, you know, to Lydia and David's point, you know, we could also do something on a tax credit or property tax to make sure that, you know, middle-class folks are not getting slammed by this.
And we should add that voters ratified the lockbox. So if tolls come to the state of Connecticut, does that mean all of that toll revenue will be put in that lockbox to be used to pay for transportation only?
Yeah, that is really important. Thank you for bringing that up, because nobody trusts the politicians. They say, oh, my gosh, you're gonna put it to transportation, and pretty soon it's going to be going to pay the operating budget again. And I'd feel more comfortable. I hear this from the business leaders in particular. I'd feel more comfortable if I knew on a guarantee that this money goes just to transportation. You can't loot it to pay other things. And that's what the lockbox is all about.
You can join our conversation on Where We Live, 860-275-7266. Linda's calling from Farmington. Linda, what's your question?
Good morning, Governor. Pleasure to speak with you.
Hi, Linda.
My question is that why is it so hard to keep the election promises? Is something that changed when you come to the office? Because I have no doubt that you will change. But it comes hard to make these decisions. And the other one, I would love to know what you're thinking about city transit. It looks that we're losing a lot of money there.
Well, two questions. I made
some. What are your plans?
I made some core promises during the campaign. I said, number one, Linda, that I was going to have the most diverse administration in the history of this state. And I think if you look at the people we have hired, it's an administration from our commissioners to the governor's staff that really reflect what makes this state great in all of its diversity. I said I'm going to hold the line on the income tax and the sales tax. And I put forward a budget to the legislature. Now it's over to them that holds the line on the income tax and the sales tax. I said I wanted to keep faith with education and make sure that's a major commitment, because there's nothing more important than great local schools and workforce development. If you want to know how you get the state going again, companies travel around the globe looking for workforce talent, and right now they should come to Connecticut, because we have the best trained, best educated, most productive workers in the world, and we're going to keep educating and training people to make sure that happens. And the other question, I think, was on city transit.
Yes, Linda wanted to know more about that. And that's a good question, because buses move a lot more people than Hartford Line.
Look, I think rail and bus transit are so important. The transit systems are going to use our major cities as hubs. That's going to help bring our major cities to life. And interconnection with bus is very important. I'm working with Joe Giletti, our head of DOT, about once we get a new source of revenue for the Special Transportation Fund, what we can do to bring down the cost of bus service. I look around just anecdotally, and I see a lot of our city buses are empty during a non-peak times. And how come our seniors, how come our vets, how come folks on their way to community college, how come I can't maybe make that free or at least a lot less expensive for them during that off-peak time? And by the way, that would get some of the cars off the road.
Well, we're going to be breaking in a couple of minutes to talk about some other of your budget proposals beyond tolls, but there's a lot that we do want to unpack, including this bill by State Senator Alex Bergstein, the idea of selling revenue stream that tolls are expected to produce for upfront payments that are then that are less than the amount of tolls we're bringing over time, this idea of securitization. What is your take on that? Would you support that, having a third party come in also to operate the system as well?
Well, we're certainly, Lucy, going to look at public-private partnerships and ways that we can upgrade our transportation the most economical way possible. I'm not really interested in selling off our public infrastructure. That doesn't seem to make the most sense to me. But working collaboratively with the private sector, that's something I would look at. I'd also look at it as a business guy who's now here fighting for the public every day. And I make sure public-private, it's not the taxpayers who take all the downside risk and the private guys who get all the upside. You know, I'd make sure we do this on a fair economical basis. But I got to bring down the cost of construction and to give you confidence that your money has been well invested in our transportation system.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, if tolls come to Connecticut, you wouldn't support a third-party agency dealing with that system?
Well, that's a different question. I mean, you could ask me, what if we had a transportation authority that was independent that oversaw that? So legislators couldn't, you know, raise tolls unilaterally. And this is the way they do it in New York and some other places. I haven't gotten that far, but it's certainly something I would think about.
And a little bit more on the securitization of toll revenue, getting an upfront payment to help pay down the deficit from a private partner. Would you support that?
Again, I'd be very reluctant, but let me see the details. Some people have talked about, look, if we got some upfront money, let's put that into the teachers of the state employee pension fund, shore that up and give the next generation of workers the confidence their pension will be there for them.
Governor Ned Lamont is here with me. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil on Where We Live today as we talk about his budget proposals. You can join us, too. The number 860-275-7266. You can also find us on Twitter. Just tweet us at Where We Live. And we're here on Facebook Live as well. Add your question or comment below that video stream. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. In studio with us today, Governor Ned Lamont. We're breaking down his budget proposals. We spent a lot of time on transportation. There's a lot more to get to. You can join us too, 860-275-7266. I wanted to talk a little bit more about all of the expansions for the sales tax. One being all this, also taxing certain things like soda, like plastic bags. Tell us your rationale, your thinking behind that, Governor.
My rationale, Lucy, in the old days, say a generation ago, the sales tax was the workhorse. We raised all of our revenue that way, and the sales tax applied to, say, two-thirds, three-quarters of our economy. Today, the sales tax applies to much less than half of our economy, and it's the slowest growing half. It's the Sears Roebuck economy, over-the-counter sales. The fastest growing pieces of our economy are e-commerce, digital, consumer services, and the such. So we thought, look, let's hold the rate. Let's not raise the sales tax. Depending on how much we can broaden the base, we could even potentially reduce the sales tax rate a little bit. But my thinking was it would be a more reliable, predictable revenue stream if we just didn't raise taxes on a narrower piece of the economy, but expanded the base.
But something like taxing plastic bags, there's also a movement in the state to ban plastic bags, and doing that over several years and tacking a fee onto that. Is that muddying that proposal up when you think about predictable, reliable revenue, but eventually you're not going to get that from the plastic bags, are you, if that ban
No, passes? I hope we don't. I hope plastic bags go the way of the dodo. And that may happen. We show some revenues from plastic bags. I don't think it starts to the second year, so people can plan for it and save up. Maybe reusable plastic bags will help them. And then eventually, over time, that revenue goes down as people move away. But look, it's an environmental issue that's colossal, and I think we can do something about it.
What feedback are you getting from the General Assembly? Because they're hearing from their constituents who don't want to see having to pay tax when they're, getting legal services or paying their accountant. Again, people on fixed income where every little bit matters, Governor.
Well, I'm hearing quite a bit from the legislature, that's for sure. But I've asked them just to be constructive. Don't just say, I'm against this, I'm against that. Cut another $1 billion in spending, cut this tax. Look, come forward with numbers that add up. We haven't had a budget in this state that really added up in an honest way. I was shocked as a business person looking at this budget. You know, it's close to insolvent as a business person. You saw how this is and the number of fixed costs and the unfunded liabilities that are out there. So I am going to hold the legislature accountable. It's fine if you want to criticize from the sidelines, but then come forward with constructive, real alternatives. And believe me, the door is open. I'm ready to listen.
A lot of expansions with the sales tax. Can I ask you, if you were to get those expansions this legislative session, does that mean next year you wouldn't propose raising the sales tax rate?
What I've done is put in place a budget that lasts for at least the next 4 years, which is about 3.5 years longer than the last budgets have lasted for. We're always coming back in the middle of the year and, oh my gosh, we overestimated this. The most important thing I hear from business and labor and from superintendents of schools and mayors is give us a little bit of consistency, Ned. I don't expect you to overpromise. You know, we had a campaign where I was running against somebody who's going to eliminate all these taxes, eliminate the income tax. And that scared folks in this sense. They don't want a lot of turbulence. They want a consistent policy so they can count on it and they know what their budget's going to look like year in and year out.
But there's also fatigue from residents who are listening right now when they hear that you're trying to obviously plug the deficit over the next 3-4 years, but you can't say that the sales tax isn't going to go up after that if you're reelected.
Well, I like to make promises I can keep. You know, I can't tell you whether somebody declares war on Iran and the markets go to hell in a handbasket, income tax revenues collapse, and I've got to somehow come up with a balanced budget. What I can tell you is under our current budget with the set of estimates we've got right now, with a really strong rainy day fund, I'm ready to handle that contingency.
A strong rainy day fund, some would say that you should take some of that money and plug the deficit. That's been done before. Why not now?
That's lousy. That's lousy business. I'll tell you why. You don't use the rainy day fund to plug operating expenses. What you use the rainy day fund is if in the case, like I said before, there's an economic downturn and our estimates for revenues fall off, you usually end up cutting services for the most vulnerable people at the last moment. I do not want that to happen. And that's why I want to keep the rainy day fund there for a rainy day. That's what it's about. We did use some of it, though, to shore up the teachers' pension fund, as I said before. But that's not to fix an operating hole. That's a one-time deal to make sure we can fix the teachers' pension fund.
You can join our conversation on Where We Live, 860-275-7266. David's calling from Groton. David, go ahead.
Hi, David.
David, go ahead with your question.
Oh, hey, how's it going? Sorry. I know you ran on a platform for legalizing marijuana in Connecticut. And if we use the network that's already in place, plus the projected dispensaries, wouldn't that create a surplus of cash for the state in order to fix a lot of these budget concerns?
Yes and no. If we legalize and regulate marijuana along the lines of Rhode Island and Massachusetts and get the black market out of that business, it would be better from a health point of view. You'd know it was in the pot, but more, and it would also raise some revenue. Not enough to make a real difference in terms of our budget deficit, but it would make a small difference.
This idea of legalizing marijuana, it doesn't seem to be happening anytime soon in Connecticut. Are we missing our window of opportunity with all these other states, Governor Lamont?
Well, I think we're going to get this done. I mean, I was talking to Gina Raimondo in Rhode Island. There, we do something very similar. I don't like the way it's applied in terms of criminal justice. I think it sometimes discriminates against people of color. I think it kills a lot of great careers when people have that on their record for the rest of their life. And it creates a certain disrespect for the law. So I think it's something we're going to do, and we're going to do it carefully, and we're going to get it done.
What do you say to some residents, we even hear from medical professionals, law enforcement, that they're really worried about legalization of marijuana and the message it sends to young people?
First of all, it's 21 years of age. Secondly, the black market is rampant. People are getting it right now. That's terrible. That creates a disrespect for the law. Or you drive right across the border to Massachusetts or right down to New Jersey. So I'm afraid that train has left the station, and I'm going to do what we do in a way that makes sure that we're protected and regulated.
Jim's calling from Southington. Jim, you're on Where We Live. What's your question?
Hi, Ned. Jim from Southington.
Hey, Jim.
Hi, how are you? My question is, you know, we're talking about new taxes and getting more revenue in, but what are we doing to curb pensions for state workers and teachers? I work for the federal government, and my pension is drastically different than what state workers and teachers get. And also in private industry, I know they've done a lot with getting away from pension funds, such as Pratt Whitney's is on that route as well, with the 401k. So why we keep on digging a hole deeper and deeper with going into debt for these pension funds that are antiquated. They're from the 1960s and 70s type when companies did big pensions and when the federal government did the big pensions.
Yep, no, I hear you. That's a good question. First of all, I got to tell you that state employees have had their salaries frozen, you know, on and off over the last, 6 or 7 years. They would say they've given up quite a bit. I would tell you that we are making significant reforms in a state employee health care plan that will not disadvantage state employees, but potentially save the state well over $100 million in the next budget. I think that's an important thing to consider. Thirdly, we are stretching out the payments on the pension funds so we don't face this cliff, which we could right now. And as you know, I also mentioned in my budget address that I think we have to look at COLA, which is the cost of living increases, if we're ever going to bring down the unfunded liability over a period of time. So there's a lot on the table. Some of the newer employees already have a combined 401k and defined benefit, a hybrid plan, they call it. So we're working constructively with our friends in labor to make sure that we have a system that's sustainable for the near term and the long term.
Governor, again, your budget calling to restructure the state's pension debt payments. So you said that it's important to give some relief on the front end, but there's consequences. Pushing the debt obligations further, where my children might be paying if they decide to stay in Connecticut. So how do you respond to that? Because isn't that what has been done for decades now in Connecticut?
What's been done for decades is let's not pay anything into the pension fund, and then let's have a big balloon payment due as soon as the next poor governor comes into office. This took us, Lucy, 30, 40, 50 years of non-payment or underpayment of this fund, and now the bills are coming due, and they're on our desk. So I can't ask just these current taxpayers to pick up all that load over the next 10 or 15 years. That would disadvantage young. That would disadvantage education. That would hurt our social services. What I have done is said, look, it took us 30 years to get in this mess. It may take us 30 years to get out of this mess. But let's do it on a fixed straight line basis. Everybody makes their contribution. And the fixed cost will be a slowly diminishing piece of our overall budget, which means more money to invest in our future. We're at a big disadvantage compared to our peers, by the way. We spend maybe 30% of our budget for past due obligations, pension, health care, bonded debt. And that means we spend a lot less in the future, investing in the future, than our neighbors do. And that's got to change.
Connecticut is certainly in a big mess, and you and others are trying to deal with these debt obligations. But again, there's fatigue from residents who don't see any kind of relief in sight. Why should they stick with Connecticut? We hear people who say they don't want to live here anymore.
Oh, yeah, you got to stay in Connecticut. This is a place where you want to be. And we've got amazing employers. They're hiring. We got tens of thousands of jobs we can't fill right now. You've got a governor and a legislature working together to make sure we fix this budget, not just for the near term, but for the long term. We have a transportation strategy that will get this state moving again. So your kids, maybe they're in New York or Boston, but all of a sudden they find they can be in Hartford or New Haven or New London and get around a lot easier and faster. We're going to be one of the first states in the country, or certainly in New England, that has a 5G service. We're working on that. So you can do anything you want in Hartford that you can do in Brooklyn, New York. It makes it easier for young people to grow and expand here. We're a fair amount less expensive than New York and Boston, some of our peers as well. That's not just in terms of taxes, but also housing. And we're going to keep faith with young people, invest in education. So this is a place where you want to have a family.
Nick's calling from Ellington. Nick, go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good. Hey, Nick. What's your question?
I'm a veteran small business owner, and, you know, I spent most of my life voting Democrat. And unfortunately, because, you know, a lot of the socialist-type rhetoric and et cetera that's on the mainstream, I had to rethink my positions. And here in Connecticut, it's been kind of the same rhetoric that we've been hearing on the grand stage. It's kind of trickled down, and our local politicians seem more focused on, you know, bashing anything Trump than dealing with anything Connecticut. And I don't see, you know, I talk to a lot of small business owners. I don't see a future here for me or anymore coming up with your budget proposal. And when you say, you know, the paid leave and the $15 minimum wage, I have brought this to my state rep, and he can't seem to come up with an answer. But can I give you a scenario here?
Quickly, Nick. We're running out of time, okay. So do it very quickly.
All right, I will try. Small business owner, you know, you don't make $500,000 a year. You know, you got 20 guys working for you. You have to pay them each $5 more per hour. Then you pay 30% on top of that payroll for FICA, Social Security, unemployment compensation, general liability, et cetera, et cetera. Now your payroll goes up $5,200 per week. You times that by 52 weeks, you're up over $270,000 per year. I can't afford $270,000 per year more because we want our politicians to buy votes in the inner city.
So, Nick, I think Nick's question, too, he wants to understand how we can, the government mandate this minimum wage going up that won't impact his bottom line, Governor Lamont.
All right. Thanks for the question, Nick, and thanks for your service as a vet. Look, I'm the first business guy that's led this state in a generation. I come out of small business. I know exactly what it is at the end of the month to make sure you have enough to pay your bills and maybe something left over. So I understand exactly the frustration you feel. And I'm doing everything I can and, reduce some of the nuisance taxes, including the business entity tax, which is paid disproportionately by small business. You know, going forward, yeah, I do think we should slowly and methodically raise the minimum wage. I want work to pay. I understand that more and more folks are single parents or double income parents and, having somebody being able to take care of a sick child. These are all important ways to make sure our workplace accommodates the worker of the 21st century. So I'd urge you to work with us to make sure this is reasonable for small business and gets the job done for our workers across the state.
Governor Ned Lamont is with me, Lucy Nalpathanchel, here on Where We Live. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I got to ask you about school regionalization. A lot of parents showed up at the LOB on Friday. And you can join us, too. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. In studio with us this hour, Governor Ned Lamont. You can join us, too. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Let's talk through regionalization, because I was saying last week that as long as I've lived in Connecticut, about 12 years, this comes up time and time again. Now there are several bills, including you're also proposing certain school districts regionalizing. Tell us what you've proposed and how are you going to get the legislature to agree?
So, Lucy, there was a question about promises made. I said during the campaign that I will do nothing to compromise the feisty independence of our 169 towns. And I know how important local control of your schools are, and that will not change. I also said during the campaign I'm not going to subsidize inefficiency. And when it comes to back office, when it comes to IT, when it comes to purchasing, there are ways that our schools can save a heck of a lot of money. So what my bill does, the governor's bill, it says, look, I'm going to continue to incent ways that we can bring down the cost of education, make sure more of that overhead is not spent on overhead, but is money that goes into the classroom. But I think a parent should know I'm not doing anything to compromise the independence of your local schools.
But isn't one of the proposals that certain districts, smaller districts, if they don't find a way to collaborate on, say, who the superintendent is, they're going to get less money from the state?
One of the proposals we have is, yeah, we're going to give you incentives. You know, we have a lot of very small school districts that spend maybe 50% more per pupil than other towns because of just what you said. They have a lot of overhead spread across very few students. So I would like to give them incentives to do things that bring down costs for everybody. But at the end of the day, if they want to have one superintendent for that one school, God bless them. They're allowed to do that. No, nothing will change.
We didn't get a chance to talk about your strategy for who you've selected to lead state agencies. Some commissioners are sticking around from the previous administration. Some you've nominated, including former Goldman Sachs executive David Layman, I believe. Tell us why you have nominated him to lead DECD, the Department of Economic and Community Development.
So pull the lens back a little bit. I've got... It's as good a group of folks as I have ever worked with, both as commissioners and our governor's team. I was always a little skeptical about people that went in the government, didn't think they were as good maybe as the guys in the private sector. This is wrong. I've got an extraordinary team. Some come from outside Hartford. Some come from inside Hartford. Some are, you know, come from the public. Some come from the private. And we can go through who that group is. And it's an incredibly diverse group. And 48% are women. Mm-hmm. Susan's always pushing me. Keep going, Ned.
But I asked specifically about your choice for David Layman, again, a former Goldman Sachs, this company that even the U.S. Senate, when they investigated after the financial crisis, said that Goldman Sachs had a lot to do with the fact that millions of Americans lost a lot of money, especially the working poor, the middle class. Why?
David Layman is going to be leading our economic development efforts. He has spent the last 10 years working on public-private partnerships. He's spent the last 10 years working on opportunity zones. He knows business folks inside the state and outside the state. You're right. He's very different than the usual person we have leading DECD. But I'm really proud that he has come forward. He's living at the Hilton Hotel here in Hartford much time during the week. He's rolled up his sleeves, and he'll do an extraordinarily good job. And I get it. A lot of people have Googled Goldman Sachs, and they say Goldman Sachs is a firm where he was. And they blame them, you know, blame the firm or Wall Street for a lot of what happened. And Wall Street deserves some of that blame. Absolutely. We leveraged ourselves to the eyeballs. Deregulation was a disaster in the 90s and how that resulted out. But that's not David Layman. I mean, David Layman was 28 years old. He had just showed up. He's a guy who really wants to do everything he can to get this state growing again. And he gives us the best opportunity to do that. Him alongside Ingenui, I allowed her to be retired from PepsiCo for about an hour or two. And she's going to co-lead our efforts in terms of economic development, along with Jim Smith, who was retired from Webster Bank about 3 hours. So I've got a great team that gives this state the best chance to get growing again.
So the fact that he worked for a company where there was evidence that they deceived investors to make money, deceive their clients, you don't see that as being attached to David Layman?
I don't see that as being attached to David Layman. And you can't paint with a broad brush. I mean, I just think that's fundamentally unfair to this young man and what he wants to do for this state. And, Wall Street were selling some lousy products, but they were generally selling lousy products to hedge funds, you know, that were, you know, derelict and not paying attention to what they were buying. That doesn't have anything to do with David. David's all about growth and opportunity in this state.
We just have a couple of minutes left. Again, Governor Ned Lamont was with us here on Where We Live. I want to take a quick call. Anna from Middlebury. Anna, we have just under a minute. Tell us what your question is for the governor.
Yes, good morning, Governor Lamont.
Hi, Anna.
First, I'd like to say that I love Connecticut. Anyway, I was raised on Long Island, but I love it here. I'm also a Waterbury public school teacher. And I have a couple of comments. One, we do have, you know, on average, a fantastic public education system here in Connecticut, and our young people are well-educated. The thing is, like you said, they do tend to go to New York City and Boston, where the standard of living is much more expensive. So what to do? I have a daughter who grew up here in Middlebury, and she now lives in Waltham, Massachusetts, and she loves New Haven. And she would love to come back. So that's one thing. Also, you know, there's a lot more going towards walkable urbanism, which I think is why a lot of young people tend to choose Boston and New York. The other thing is one of the callers talked about 401ks and the teacher's pension. And I do have an issue with that because the 401ks were created to supplement pension plans, not replace them. And you can see as the...
Anna, we're out of time. What is your one question to Lamont?
Question is, what can the state do to ensure that people do stay here and our young people do come back?
Perfect.
And live
Governor Lamont.
I'm with you, Anna. I'm sorry. And by the way, I grew up in Long Island and I love Connecticut. So we've got that in common. And Waterbury is really on the rise.
So we're out of time,
cities,
unfortunately.
Bring back our cities. Make sure they're places where young people want to be. Not just jobs and opportunity, but fun and lively cultural centers.
Thank you, Governor Lamont, for coming on Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Thanks for listening.